Members, we're going to get started here. We do not have a quorum at present time, so we will officially gavel us in once that is reached. Today we are meeting to really take a look at Minnesota's Race to the Top application and specifically how it measures up or is relating to the measures of teacher quality and effectiveness in our current state statute, and trying to take a look at how those two are aligning as well as any indicators that we might have of what our role is in effectively implementing any of the strategies that the Department of Education is looking at to make sure that we qualify for the Race to the Top dollars. So as we're going through this today, I guess I would ask members that you take a look at the current state statute and how it measures our teacher quality and effectiveness, as well as then how is that being reflected in the application, and asking those kind of probing questions then of the relationship between the two. With that, we're going to start with Lisa Larson from House Research, who's going to give us kind of an overview of current statute and rule. We have built in some time then for some questions for her as well. Thank you, Ms. Larson.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. What I'd like to do today, in anticipation of hearing from the commissioner and others regarding Minnesota's Race to the Top proposal, and specifically as it affects measures of teacher quality and effectiveness, is to first review the measures of quality and effectiveness that we have in statute, in rule, and in practice. I would argue that there are probably three major categories of measures currently in place, one having to do with teacher preparation, a second having to do with teacher licensure and relicensure, and a third having to do with employment provisions in statute. There are also other provisions that don't apply uniformly in the sense that they affect fewer than all the teachers. Those would be the teacher advancement programs, both TAP and QCOMP, and then the National Board certification. Added in there are staff development activities that are ongoing in local districts. So what I'd like to do now is to quickly run through this list. I'm sure you're familiar with these measures. There are lots of experts on this committee because they live and breathe this stuff in their professional lives. First, with respect to requirements governing teacher preparation institutions and programs, the Minnesota Board of Teaching approves Minnesota colleges and universities and their teacher preparation programs. Individuals who complete teacher preparation programs that are approved by the board can be recommended for a license. An institution that does not have board approval cannot recommend a teacher candidate for licensure. The board periodically evaluates and approves both teacher preparation institutions and programs. The approval may be for a term of up to 7 years. There are differences in how the board approaches its approval process in terms of institutional and program approval. The program approval has experts who are familiar with particular licensure areas that these programs serve. The board also may grant a 5-year approval of experimental teacher programs that meet certain criteria. My understanding is that this has been applied unevenly. In the past, the expectations were a little bit less rigorous, and my understanding now is that the board imposes quite rigorous criteria in approving these experimental teacher preparation programs. I got a little bit ahead of myself in item 1D. The Board of Teaching does approve individual licensure programs, but its current program is called PEPPER. PERCA, which Karen Ballmer discussed last week, is the process the board anticipates using in the fall to evaluate its teacher preparation programs. Also, it should be noted that the Board of Teaching standards are similar to what they call NCATE, the National Association for Colleges of Teacher Education. These are national accrediting standards, and I understand that one half of Minnesota teacher preparation institutions are NCATE accredited currently. There's also another accrediting organization called the Teacher Education Accrediting Council, and a few teacher preparation programs and institutions are accredited through that organization. Secondly, another measure of teacher quality and effectiveness goes to teacher licensure requirements. In order for a person to receive a professional teaching license, a traditional Minnesota candidate must complete a board-approved teacher preparation program, which would include student teaching, and pass basic skills exams in reading, writing, and math, as well as exams of general pedagogical knowledge and licensure-specific teaching skills. Underlying these exams of pedagogy and teaching skills are standards of effective practice that govern these particular areas. The Board of Teaching also issues other licenses. They are established in rule. Some of them, such as the intern license, I understand are used infrequently. The board no longer issues a life license, although it does honor those people who have them. In order to renew a professional teaching license, a teacher has to complete 125 clock hours of continuing education before renewing that five-year professional license for another five-year period. Perhaps at this point it should be added that in statute we have requirements for staff development. We require local staff development committees. We outline activities that are permitted as part of staff development, what the contents of staff development plan should look like, and what outcomes are anticipated. Local continuing education or relicensure committees are required to verify that teachers have met the 125 clock hour requirements in order to have their license renewed. Both professional development activities as well as college coursework would count for clock hours. Both the Board of Teaching and the Board of School Administrators, which is responsible for licensing school administrators, have the authority to grant variances from their licensure rules. So we've covered both preparation requirements as well as licensure requirements, and now we come to the third major area of teacher quality and effectiveness, and that goes to statutory requirements governing employment, both for probationary teachers as well as continuing contract teachers. There are two statutory sections that provide the majority of the law in this area. 122.840 goes to general provisions that affect all teachers with continuing contract rights except teachers in first-class city school districts, which are Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth for purposes of this law. 122A41 covers the teachers in those three first-class city districts. A newly licensed probationary teacher who successfully completes 3 years of continuous employment becomes a continuing contract teacher in a non-first-class city school district or a tenured teacher in a first-class city school district. School boards that employ the probationary teacher are required to evaluate the teacher, but in the statute, the standards for the evaluations are not specified, and the school boards have discretion as to whether or not to renew a probationary teacher's employment contract. I think the law says that the board may or may not renew the contract of a probationary teacher, and I think the exact words are, as it sees fit. So that gives the school boards a lot of discretion in terms of whether or not to renew a contract. A teacher who receives a continuing contract or tenure becomes entitled to employment-related protections, and that's one of the important purposes or the important aspects of receiving continuing contract or tenure rights. Both statutes, 122A40 and 122A41, do require mentoring for probationary teachers as well as peer coaching for continuing contract teachers, but do not specify either the standards or the frequency for these activities. Teachers continuing contracts in non-first class city school districts remain in full force and effect unless the school board either terminates the teacher, and this might be for inefficiency, neglect of duty, conduct unbecoming a teacher, or other grounds that would make the teacher unfit. Another alternative would be if the school board immediately discharges a teacher for immoral conduct, conduct unbecoming a teacher, fail to teach, gross inefficiency, willful neglect of duty, or continuing physical or mental disability, among other grounds. tenured teachers in first-class city school districts may be discharged or demoted for immoral conduct, conduct unbecoming a teacher, insubordination, failure to teach, or inefficiency in teaching or in managing a school, among other circumstances. Now, these are the three major areas for measuring teacher quality and effectiveness. There are two other measures that we look to currently, and they are not uniform, and I say not uniform in the sense that not all teachers are involved with these measures. The first of these is QComp and TAP, the Teacher Advancement and Compensation Program. The Millikan Family Foundation started the Teacher Advancement Program, which is called TAP, in 1999. And TAP is widely regarded as providing the basis upon which QComp is structured. TAP included ongoing professional development, standardized teacher evaluations, performance bonuses based on teacher evaluation outcomes and student test scores, and a career ladder that enabled teachers with more expertise to serve as mentors and master teachers and to evaluate and train other teachers. There are several examples of TAP schools in Minnesota, TAP schools and districts in Minnesota, between 2001 and 2005 when the legislature adopted QComp. QComp is a voluntary alternative teacher professional pay system that expanded alternative compensation programs and funding in Minnesota districts and schools, including charter schools. QComp allows interested districts, and this would include intermediate districts, Perfect School for the Arts, other school sites, and charter schools, and their teachers to agree to a professional development and compensation plan specific to local needs. I spoke with the director of the TAP program in Minneapolis to learn something about TAP, how TAP operates. And it seems that there are a couple of things to recommend it. One is a low ratio of career teachers to mentors. I think it's about 1 to 28, which, according to the director, allows for more intensive mentoring as well as frequent reviews. There seems to be a lot of support for the professional development aspects of the program. The tying performance measures to compensation is a more complicated matter. There's discussion about using a minimum of 3 to 4 years of performance data as a basis for any kind of student performance measures. I think also the sentiment is that while the compensation is welcome and no one would reject it, that is not the principal motive for the program, but rather the opportunities for meaningful professional development. All QComp programs have five program components to them. One is the career advancement options that allow teachers with expertise to receive added compensation for taking on additional responsibilities to help other teachers improve their teaching skills. Second, job embedded professional development that requires schools to deliver staff development activities during the school day. Three, an objective teacher evaluation plan that relies on local trained evaluation teams using multiple criteria to evaluate individual teachers multiple times and is part of how a teacher's salary increase is determined. Fourth, performance pay that bases at least 60% of compensation increases for teacher performance on measures using school-wide student achievement gain on standardized tests such as the MCAs, other student achievement measures, and individual teacher evaluations. And finally, the fifth item or component of a QComp plan is the alternative salary schedule that would be reflected in the local collective bargaining agreement and that requires a reformed steps and lane salary schedule. As of 2009 and 2010, 44 districts and 31 charter schools were eligible for QComp. There is QComp funding available. It has not been exhausted. QComp districts receive up to $260 per student. and that's $169 per student in state aid and $91 per student in board-approved levy. And QCOM charter schools receive about $240 per student in state aid through an equalized levy. The Minnesota Legislative Auditor did a study of QCOM and issued a report in February of 2009 evaluating QCOM and determined at that time that the effect of QCOM on student achievement could not be adequately measured using existing data. And I make this point in part for the next item on the outline, and that is National Board Certification, because that's also a means that is not uniformly applied in Minnesota, but for which some Minnesota teachers have experience. The National Board for Professional Teaching Standards developed professional teaching standards and then an assessment system and a voluntary certification process by which teachers can achieve National Board certification. In order to be certified by the National Board, teachers spend up to 3 years demonstrating what they know and can do. Some Minnesota districts have provided financial support and incentives to teacher candidates who seek and attain National Board certification. There has been research on the effectiveness of board certification on student test scores, other measures of student performance, and student learning. What the research shows with respect to National Board certification is that certification positively influences teacher practice and morale, professional development, and areas of school improvement, such as leadership development, teacher mentoring, monitoring of student performance, team building, and curriculum development. However, the impact of certification on student achievement as measured by standardized tests is a more mixed bag. In 2004, national board data showed that board certified teachers are underrepresented in high poverty, high minority, and low performing schools, and that non-white candidates are less likely than white candidates to achieve board certification. There are two mentions of national board certification in rule. One has to do with teachers coming from outside of who receive training outside of Minnesota and have board certification. They are eligible for a limited term license to complete the licensing requirements for a Minnesota license. And also a teacher who is making efforts to attain national board certification can have the time equivalent to those efforts count toward fulfilling clock hour requirements for relicensure.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. I'm reminding all of us here how fortunate we are to have wonderful, terrific staff that's very well immersed in both the research and the statutory history of our work in education. Members, we are at a quorum, and so I'm going to call us officially to order. And I will share that I learned a lesson about vice today. Of course, you know, vices are they exist to detract us from the work that we're meant to do. And my vice this morning was to grab a cup of coffee on West 7th Street, and upon which grabbing my coffee, got back in my car stalled for a good 10 to 15 minutes. And so I apologize for being late this morning. And I want to thank Representative Kath for getting us going. Members, I will repeat, no doubt, what Representative Kath shared, which is our focus today is to look at specifically the teacher and principal proposals inside the Race to the Top grant application to the federal government. And as you all recall, you know, there's a sort of a new design around evaluation, performance, pay, professional development, and distribution of highly effective teachers and principals in our state consistent with those grant guidelines. And the question today, members, isn't so much for us to get deep into the objective information about the design, although we can do that, absolutely, but it's really about what I really want us to focus is about the consistency of that of what's in the design and the proposal with Minnesota statute. Obviously to set up a conversation about whether or not we need to be acting proactively to change Minnesota statute or, quite frankly, acting proactively to say no to certain proposals in the R2T proposal in order to be consistent with Minnesota statutes. And I'm not tipping one way or the other in terms of my preference. I just think it's a very good objective conversation for us to have. A state statute precedes grant proposals, and it supersedes, in my mind as well, federal guidelines. And I think as state legislators, it's important for us to pay attention to our allegiance and our ownership over Minnesota law. So with that, what we're going to do is we're going to move on to hear from the Department of Education. I know Representative Gradley has a question. I'm going to hold off for a second, if that's okay, Representative Gradley.
Mr. Chair, as long as I can ask my question of Ms. Larson.
Very well. What I want to do is get through the department's presentation. They've put together, I've looked at their PowerPoint. It's a very good presentation. And, Commissioner, I'm probably going to push you a little bit just to keep us specifically focused in the way that I have just mentioned for the committee members. And then we want to hear from Education Minnesota that has raised some questions relative to consistency of state statute relative to these proposals, and then also from the Minnesota Elementary School Principals Association, because members, again, it's not just teachers but principals that are embedded inside the grant proposal. So with that, I'm going to ask Commissioner Segrin to welcome you to our committee and give us your testimony this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I will be very quick so that you can get to your questions.
Thank you.
In your packet, you have a hard copy of the PowerPoint that I will go through. You also have an analysis of the Race to the Top application. It is titled Legal Support for the State of Minnesota's Race to the Top Proposal. As you know, every state had to have their attorney general verify that the state laws that were in place supported the Race to the Top application or did not prevent anything in the application from going forward. And the Attorney General did certify that our state laws support and do not restrict anything in the Race to the Top application. And then also you have just a map for your information. Part of the Race to the Top is also to work with the persistently lowest performing schools, and that's there just for your information of those schools that will be identified that we'll be working with as we go forward. Just to give you, remind you what the Race to the Top is about, it's a $4.3 billion competitive grant. Will only be given out to about 10 to 15 states. We have asked for $330 million in our Race to the Top grant. And we have a significant opportunity to accelerate our achievement and close the achievement gap. The things that we are focused on doing for the state is, as I said, close the achievement gap, make sure that we have high overall achievement for all of our students, have quality and accountability, that we want to elevate the teaching profession, raise the level of community engagement with our school districts, and support and collaborate with them, and use our technology more expansively to improve instruction. Remind you of why we think Race to the Top will be helpful for our students and parents. We will hopefully they'll be able to know how their children are progressing over time. There'll be better support for teachers and principals. There'll be increased access to academic rigor for all of our students, and we'll hopefully improve all overall student achievement and close the achievement gap. For teachers, there'll be greater access to data and support in using that data, a full spectrum of professional development, enhanced professional opportunities for their career, and a broad range, again, of professional development opportunities. For principals, we will have enhanced professional development opportunities for them, and a better and more timely information for which they can be informed of how their site is progressing. We will also be helping the persistently low-achieving schools with strategies, oversight, and support. Also for LEAs, there will be increased overall support for them to do their work. And then for Minnesota's future, we want to ensure the ongoing reputation of Minnesota's reform strategies as a national leader, and we want to build on that strong foundation for the future. Just to remind you, the six factors that have to be met in Race to the Top are listed there. We have to define our state success factors, our history of reform. We have to have strong standards and assessments, data systems to support instruction, great teachers and leaders, turning around the lowest achieving schools. That's why we gave you that map, so you can look at who we'll be working with. And then we have, there's general selection criteria. One of the big focuses is on charter schools. Again, this is the point system that is assigned to each of those areas. So you can see that what we're focusing on today, the great teachers and leaders, has the most weight. And so we will talk to you about that. And then we'll start now with the strategies. And also I want to just draw your attention. In the back of your hard copy PowerPoint, the last two pages is the specific requirements for the application in for great teachers and leaders. And it's the last two pages. So if you think that some of this stuff is are things that we wanted to do that was not in the application, all of these things that we're going to be discussing with you have to meet the application criteria. So first of all, we're proposing to amend the Board of Teaching and the Board of School Administrative rules to have a more streamlined, consistent authorization for alternative preparation programs. And the pages that are referenced there are the pages in the application. We did not print out this application because we would have killed probably a whole forest of trees, but you can go on our website to look at those references. We want to facilitate development of a teacher and a principal-led recommended state evaluation rubric. Why are we doing that? It is required that teachers and principals have an evaluation in Race to the Top for the purposes of improving their performance as principals and teachers. And many of our rural members are very interested in QCOM. And they don't have the depth of staff to take somebody away from their work to develop an evaluation rubric. So they've come to us and said, can you work with us on an evaluation rubric? Many of our districts use the Charlotte Danielson rubric as an evaluation tool. But this is an opportunity for us to bring together all of the stakeholders and really talk about, could we develop something that would be adopted voluntarily, would not be something that would be forced on anyone, but would be something that we could use that would meet the criteria of Race to the Top, but also meet the needs of our districts in a Minnesota way. So we will be doing doing that development.
And Commissioner, I will interrupt. I apologize. I just want to point out to members, in your packets, you also have a handout of the, is this the specific language of the contract? Of the application, specific language in the application relative to great teachers and leaders, so it just fills in much more detail than what we're hearing here, because obviously there's a lot to cover and the commissioner's doing a great job of moving us through. But if you want to get deeper into the information, you have that in your handouts. Commissioner, I apologize for interrupting.
No problem, Mr. Chair. It's your committee. We want to enhance evaluation and use and its use by requiring participating Race to the Top LEAs to implement an enhanced version of QComp, and that's on pages 115 through 117, and we'll go through that in the PowerPoint as to what the enhanced QComp would look like. We want to use evaluation results to establish and improve the distribution of effective teachers and principals. Now, this is new. Kind of a deviation, or maybe I could say a different way of looking at teacher effectiveness. In the past, if you remember, No Child Left Behind talked about highly qualified teachers. We had to define what that was in Minnesota. Then we had to assure the federal government that we didn't have districts that had disproportionate lack of highly qualified teachers or lack of highly qualified teachers, particularly in high-risk schools. Now what they're looking at is a term, highly effective. And now, as states, we're supposed to be developing what that looks like and how we measure that and using baseline data. So that's been something that I think all of us as states have, you know, really have an opportunity to look at and develop, but it also is something that we haven't done before. Also, we want to redesign teacher, or we have to redesign teacher and principal licensure by tiering licenses and enhancing competency requirements to progress. One of the specific things with Race to the Top is they want to delineate the steps or the degree of how proficient you are. It's not about that you are or you aren't, but having levels of progress made that can be distinguished as you're going through your profession. So we proposed a certain framework to accomplish that. We want to provide support through induction, peer assistance and review, and the Minnesota Principals Academy and other professional development. And we want to also strengthen teacher and principal prep programs through program authorization rules and the Bush Foundation grants. I don't know if many of you know, the Bush Foundation has put $40 million into a competitive process whereby they have selected the University of Minnesota, some Minscu institutions, and some private school institutions that prepare teachers to kind of retool their preparation programs. And it's a very exciting opportunity, and it is also part of our Race to the Top application. So, great teachers and leaders, development of a statewide evaluation rubric. As we canvass stakeholders across the state, we heard that many districts wanted this option of a best practice model, and I kind of went over that as I talked to you. So we are going to be convening a task force. You asked about the process. How will we do this? It will be made up of teachers, principals, business people, other citizens, experts that will be looking at an evaluation process. And they will develop a rubric that would be a voluntary evaluation system that districts could use to evaluate both their principals and their teachers. We'll be doing this both with our principals, and we'll be doing that with our teachers also. Furthermore, if a QCOMP district would like to adopt that rubric as part of their evaluation, they could. Or a QCOMP district that has their own evaluation system can continue using the one that they have already selected. What we're finding, however, is with the QCOMP districts that as they are doing evaluation and they're getting more sophisticated about it, a lot of what they're doing is starting to converge, and they're starting to see that there are similar traits to the evaluation process. And so we'll be actually using some of their experience, too, to inform this evaluation rubric. There are also about 7 national models that have been used for a varying number of years around the country. This will give us an opportunity to look at those. Ms. Larson mentioned the National Board Certification process, which we have been engaged in and which a number of our teachers have used. But as Ms. Larson mentioned some of the evaluation of that, oftentimes those National Board Certification teachers have not been deployed in high-need schools, or that expertise has not been utilized in really productive ways. So, and also the National Board Certification Board is actually looking at how can they retool their evaluation process to be one of these, more of a levels of professional development that a teacher could actually go through. It's a very intensive process. So we've got lots of things going on nationally that we could bring into this task force to talk about to see what would be a Minnesota version of an evaluation rubric. So we're very excited about that, and we think that this would be a wonderful opportunity for us to do our version and kind of set the stage or the kind of light the path for other states to do the a really good evaluation rubric. So we will be providing the assistance to assemble those experts, and I think we've already had one initial meeting to kind of get a feedback about how we should do that, what the process would be. So we're moving forward on that. So we will, the makeup will be at least 50% teachers, 10% will be principals or superintendents. There'll be representatives of urban, suburban, and rural districts. There'll be key SES subgroups within the state, and there'll be both internal and external stakeholders, local unions, experts from higher education, parents, groups, businesses, etc., and students. Parents' participation by education professionals who currently conduct teacher and principal evaluations. We want people that have been doing that work because they know where the pros, the cons, the positives, and the pitfalls are. So we want their expertise. And then we want participation by experts in high-need, low-performing schools because that is one of the big focuses on Race to the Top. And our goal would be to finish the rubric by August of 2010.
Commissioner, I'm really worried that we may You're doing a great job of covering a lot of ground.
I'm almost done.
I appreciate it, but I want to make sure that we...
Okay.
Because we'll probably be circling back for you for questions at any rate.
I'm almost done.
Thank you.
I can power through this. The enhanced QComp, you asked about that. We want to implement teacher evaluation rubrics using multiple measures. That's part of the guidelines for Race to the Top. It does include linking teachers to academic achievement. We want to use student growth as well as other measures. We want to ensure the evaluation rating outcomes use a 5-level scale. Again, the Race to the Top application wanted to delineate levels of proficiency, not just you made it, you didn't. Provide support to LEAs for the creation of evaluation rubrics for non-core subject areas. We think that's very important. So if you're a social studies teacher, if you're a music teacher, special ed, we'll be assembling groups of people that will look at those standards and evaluation rubrics. We want to provide training for the evaluators. That's very important to have well-trained evaluators that know what the rubric is and the expectations are to have a fair evaluation. And we want to differentiate and tailor professional development based on the evaluation ratings and needs. And we want to refer all teachers and principals receiving the lowest ineffective rating to a peer assistance and review process. That is present in many school districts, but this would be very helpful to have those teachers that are perhaps struggling in an area to be able to have peer assistance as they move forward. As I said, one of the requirements is the equitable distribution of highly effective teachers in high-risk, low-performing schools. And we are going to look at grant opportunities that will foster a collaboration between LEAs and their local unions to develop HR policies and practice that give greater flexibility for finding and placing and retaining effective teachers in high-need schools and subjects. Oftentimes, we don't have the stability in those schools due to many, many factors. It could be declining enrollment, you have layoffs, or you have people moving in and out of those schools. What are the strategies that we could use to stabilize those schools and provide incentives and HR policies that would provide a positive environment for those school sites? And we also want to provide incentives and supports for candidates to fill those posts in high-need schools. There's been, you know, some analysis of whether incentives really retain a teacher, and the judgment is not strong that, you know, incentives are the only thing that really get a person into high needs, but there's a lot of other factors that support that are non-financial that really help us teachers stay in those schools. So we want to look at that and provide some grant monies to incent and get some ideas about how we can get high needs or teachers into those high needs areas and keep them there. What would be the incentives that would do that? Again, the state will put a high priority on grant proposals that provide non-financial and are financial incentives. And then we want to expand the use of programs with a proven track record of success in high-poverty schools. So kind of three grant opportunities, three focuses to work to get teachers into those high-poverty schools. And then we want to adopt a tiered licensure structure for teachers. What we would propose is a 3 licensures structure. You would have your probationary or provisional. You would have your continuing, which is similar to what it is now, and then an option for a teacher to receive a master license. It's not required, but it's something that would be optional. And we would say that any teacher that is in a QCOM district participating in a career ladder opportunity or career pathway, such as a mentor or master teacher, would have to have this licensure before they could be recognized and work in that kind of an area. We would also, of course, want to develop evaluation standards for that probationary teacher or provisional. Many times that's a local option as to what those standards are. We want to kind of standardize that, but again, want to emphasize that the licensure or the tenure is still a local decision. That is not a state decision. I want to make that clear to you that we are not getting into assignment of tenure with this, but it's just the more of a standard of evaluation and criteria for how you move from one level to the next. that would be a more standardized process and more consistent across states. But the decision to tenure is a local decision. The legislature has already, just to remind you, has directed the Board of Teaching in 2009 to implement new criteria for renewal of licensure every 5 years. That includes the requirement that a teacher candidate applying for relicensure show evidence of support of student learning, use of best practice techniques, and their applications to student learning, as well as collaborative work with teaching colleagues, which can be evidenced in work samples and job-embedded professional development. So you and your wisdom, probably ahead of Race to the Top, already recognize the importance of the renewal of licensure and putting a more robust picture around what that relicensure looks like. Additionally, the Board of Teaching is initiating the requirement of classroom teaching for effectiveness work samples as standard for teacher licensure candidates and teacher preparations programs statewide. They are looking at, in fact, they're working with the NTASC and NCATE groups to really do kind of a exit criteria for teacher preparation candidates once they go through their training program, a much more robust and multiple measure type of analysis of whether they are really prepared to go into their first teaching assignment. So it's not just about a paper pencil test, but it is work sample. It is demonstration of their ability to teach, you know, certain content level or show that they can engage students in learning. So that is going forward, and that is actually a partnership, and we received a grant to do that because of the work we're interested in. And then MDE will also ensure that there's adequate state-level support to roll out the new licensure structure and collect aggregate license information by school, grade, and subject. So we also want to then see what happens when these teacher candidates go into the schools. Are they effective? Are they doing the job? And so we would follow them for 3 years and feed that information back to the preparation programs. There may be a program that does a really good job in reading, but maybe they're weaker in math instruction, or maybe their pedagogical skills are lacking, and we're finding that in a preparation program. So feeding that back so that they can improve is very important. We have 51 letters of support for the Race to the Top proposals, ranging from our educational organizations to our colleges and universities, nonprofits, foundations, business group, state policymakers, and nonprofit and local government official. Just to summarize,
Commissioner, you laid out the most convincing evidence there with a senator's quote.
Yes,
that carries a lot of weight in this body.
Well, we should have gotten a a House member's quote.
Representative,
sorry about that.
It does, especially with me, since she's my state senator.
Yes, indeed. Well, for the record, you were going to sum up, Commissioner.
But she does sum up, I think, beautifully. And I think what many of you have expressed also to us, that my support is based on my comprehensive understanding of how this application was written, its diverse and broad stakeholder group support, and its potential to serve as a catalytic role in transforming Minnesota's educational system. It's an exciting time for us, and I have appreciated all of your support also as we've gone forward. Just to address some of Education Minnesota's concerns.
Commissioner, I'm just going to hold off here for a second, but what I do want to do, and we do have some questions, but I want to get us into hearing from others, and so I'm going to beg the committee's indulgence a bit, because we often do this. We'll ask a lot of questions, and then whoever's lined up, you know, winds up with very few minutes. You will be here, and so hopefully you'll have an opportunity to make those points, but people will no doubt have. I have some questions as well. I'm going to ask Ed Minnesota to come forward at this point and give their testimony. And members, again, I mean, this is really the topic, the subject for a five-hour hearing, but we're not going to be going for 5 hours. There's so many dimensions here to cover, including just the pure dimension of, you know, objective research-based screening of any of these proposals. But again, particularly what I want us to, not to negate any of that, but to really pay attention to is what is there about any of this that requires or raises in your mind the need for proactive legislative action, if at all. Ms. Allswager.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much. Jan Alsweiger, Education Minnesota. And I would correct the chair, maybe we could have 5 years of discussion over some of these policies. And actually, some of these initiatives have been discussed right here in this committee and in the Education Finance Committee for a number of years, and most all of them have been defeated. And now, with one federal grant, it seems that the department is empowered to put all of these proposals in place for districts that sign on, knowing it's just the superintendent signing on, and they will have the force and effect of law in those school districts. And usually, you have the opportunity to debate these issues. Usually, you have the opportunity to influence them or amend them, and that's not the case with this. So when the chair asks about things that are in conflict, I think really it is, the question is, and even with the statement from the commissioner about from the AG, what is your definition of conflict? Because if your definition is straight the letter of the law, is the definition of conflict with what you intend as one of the key committees, the Education Policy Committee? Is it what is left out of law? Is it only the things that are prohibited in law? And your definition of conflict could be interpreted very differently. I have a little list of issues that we think in some form or manner are a conflict with either current law or your intentions when you look at what you have passed or defeated through the legislature. Mandatory enhanced QCOMP, which we really don't know exactly what it looks like. Tiered licensure tied to test scores. Peer assistance and review, some changes. This wouldn't be major. Induction, probably we could have some support here on all sides, but is it in law now? A state-directed professional development, and probably we would have some agreement on that as well. Certainly not on the loss of due process for our teachers. That would be a change or in conflict in our mind. Teacher evaluation, significant changes there. Teacher pay, teacher promotion, retention of teachers, licensure tied to student growth, your license being tied to employment. If you do not get relicensed because you don't meet the criteria, because the test scores aren't good enough, you lose your license, you lose your job. That is not with current law, doesn't fit with current law. The equitable distribution of effective teachers, so seniority transfer issues are changing. A big one that was fought last year, alternative pathways for teaching. Changes to charter school, there'll be charter school expansion that may or may not conflict in some manner, but may in some with your intent. A statewide teacher evaluation system. And one that I mentioned, I think, to this committee before, that you might think that it's strange that I bring this up, but who gets the continuing contract for probationary teachers? Who's making that decision? Is it the administrator? Or is it because they passed the measures, even though the administrator might not think that is a person that should continue and get a continuing contract? There are, and then in taking this a little further, there are numerous committees being formed at the Department of Education. One that was just mentioned was a committee that's going to be dealing with evaluation, and that work is supposed to be done by August 2010. So what part are you going to have in that? What part are stakeholders going to have in that? And which stakeholders are going to be involved in that? And who's going to be on the committee? And who's going to name the people on the committee? Will Education Minnesota be a part of it? Which teachers are going to be included? Is it going to be partisan? Is it going to be public, charter, private? Who knows? I think those are questions that usually you have the answers for. And so that's my overarching beginning comments, and then Mr. Chair, I'd ask you to cut me short when you need to, because, like I said, I could go on forever.
Well, Ms. Salzberger, I do want to hear from MESPA, I hope I got that right.
Okay.
As well, because they also have some issues they want to raise, and I do want to make sure that, you know, we only have about 30-something minutes left. I want to make sure that some questions come in, and I want to invite the commissioner back up as well.
So, Mr. Chair, if I could take about 2 minutes on each of the three topics that were to be discussed today.
Wonderful. Thank you.
And QComp, you will know that if you were on this committee, when QComp and alternative compensation were discussed, we have never bashed QComp. We have spent as an organization thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, staff time, to promote QComp as an option, and it had to be locally decided. Our belief about QComp and alternative compensation should be that it should be voluntary, locally negotiated, which is not going to be the case if it's mandatory. You need to have sufficient ongoing funding. We don't know that you're going to have the funding for it, and that's a conflict possibly with law. We don't think it should be eliminated. Steps and lanes should be eliminated. It shouldn't be tied to test scores. And there should be an appeals process put in place from stakeholders group, because right now there have been some issues with the department not accepting some of the applications. Wow, that's the shortest I've ever testified on QComp, but I will keep it at that. Ensuring equitable distribution of effective teachers and principals. This is a one that deserves a lot of debate as well, that deserves an entire hearing, because schools have different needs. Every teacher is different. To say that if a school is not doing well, basically we need to transfer teachers, and it shouldn't be based on seniority. But what we believe is that it should be a teacher's decision and a school district's decision, and I mean it should be locally negotiated. You can come up with very good plans based on the needs of kids and the needs of the community. What teacher is going to say, yes, you know, I want to go into this high-need school if there isn't the resources and the training to make them successful, if their salary is going to be tied to test scores? Let me show you something. Take a look at this map. We put a map together of the list of persistently lowest achieving schools. We should do everything possible to help these schools. Education Minnesota is very supportive of that. Let me show you something else that I just printed out this morning. Sorry, I don't have copies. This is a map put out by Minnesota Kids Count, and it's the children in poverty in the state. Take a look at the two of them. Now, you have to ask yourself, Is it the teacher themselves that is the problem, and we're going to solve the problem by paying teachers more to do better, or that we're going to transfer them if they're not doing well enough, or if they're such good teachers, we're going to transfer them into other areas? You can see that there is, you know, you can't say it's an exact correlation, but it is a factor that if you have poverty, you have some issues around persistently low-achieving schools. And for some reason, we have gotten to this notion that if a school isn't working or kids aren't performing the best that they can, we're going to put it on the backs of teachers. They're not working hard enough, and I'm not saying that you are saying that. They're not teaching well enough. They're not trained well enough. You could go on and on. And I think teachers are a little tired of feeling that they can solve all of society's problems. Poverty and all the needs that go along with poverty came before the kids ever walked into the school. And so all we're asking is to take a long look approach to this and ask yourselves about the conflict, the intention. This affects teachers' livelihood. It affects their motivation to work in the schools. A number of factors. And I know that you're short on time, And I do have more to say, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Salzman, you'll have an opportunity, no doubt, with our question and answer period. Thank you. Next, we have Roger Aronson. Morning, Mr. Aronson.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Roger Aronson. I represent the Elementary and the Secondary Principals Associations. I understand what your charge is here. Is to get some input on the consistency with Minnesota statute and the race to the top questions. And I appreciate your indulgence in putting principals on the agenda here. We're a pretty big part of the race to the top grant. You heard the commissioner mention us several times and Ms. Elsweiger as well. A couple of things I think that you need to be aware of. In the commissioner's presentation and her slides, slide number 9 talks about enhanced QComp and to include principals in all aspects of QComp. In current law, they're not. There's nothing that prohibits districts from paying principals performance pay, and indeed many school districts do, but technically in terms of being part of the grant, we're not. And I think when it was designed, it was intended to be primarily a teacher program, and so frankly, to meet that, statutorily, you'd have to change that, I think, it'd be my opinion. Next on the list here, part of the grant talks about alternative licensure, and the grant application and the appendix are online. I took a look at it. The application is about 250 pages long. The appendix is about 400 pages long. So when you start to get into this, it's kind of complicated. But the Board of School Administrators has jurisdiction over principals' license. They have principals, superintendents, community ed directors, special ed directors. The board has sent a letter saying that they would look at adopting alternative licenses. This is a underfunded, understaffed board that's currently selecting a new executive director, doesn't have a director. Doesn't have a proposal in front of it as to what those alternative licenses might be, but they I don't know that they have the authority to do the rulemaking or not. But if those alternative licenses are going to come out of them, I think they have to come back to you. I'm not sure that they have the authority to unilaterally do that. And it's something that obviously everyone in the profession would be interested in. Another piece that's not as quite as direct a consistent or inconsistency has to do with the charter school licensure. After when charters were created, at the time the idea was that they would be teacher-run schools. Shortly after their adoption, the department came in with a legislative initiative to say, let's exempt them from the requirement of having a licensed principal, and because they're supposed to be teacher-run. So there is no, currently they're exempt from the requirement to have a license. We've done some, you know, informal surveying ourselves to find out how many we think have licenses, and it looks to us about 20% or less. And so one of the questions on all of this is there going to be an alternative charter license? How does that come out? Or are you going to require a license in those schools? And to the extent that implicit in the grant talks about principals, removing principals, and charters are in that, if we don't even have principals in them, how does that work? How is that consistent and you know with that issue? The just a couple other pieces in it, and Ms. Elsweiger touched on this as well, but I think you have to look at, you know, one of the alternatives in persistently low-performing schools is that we will remove the principal. And if that is a large district, and I think the data that I found in the grant app indicates that over 500, I think the department identifies about 500 principals are in school districts that have some low-performing schools in them. We have about 2,000 school principals statewide, elementary, secondary, and assistants. But Minneapolis has 100 about, St. Paul has 100 about. If you're going to remove somebody from a school, you can move them around in the system in Minneapolis. But if you're in Manoman with a very high poverty school that's sitting next to a reservation, you can't move those people around there. There's no places to move them to. And so there's a little conflict then that occurs there because these people have continuing contract rights under the under the statute. And so, frankly, to if you were going to discharge them, you'd have to find some way to do that in the smaller schools. So that would be an issue there as well. But those are kind of the key conflicts that we see in this. And I want to say, when you come in and say consistency or inconsistency, it sounds rather negative. The department's been very positive working with us, and I want to convey that to the committee as well. We participated in the initial evaluation questions and task force and stuff that's being set up, and the commissioner and deputy commissioner have always been very open and active with the principals talking about these issues as well.
Thank you, Mr. Aronson, and perhaps the chair could have used a better adjective as well. Again, you know, my intent is to make sure that whatever is dictated in real life has an alignment with legislative intent and the law of the land. And as many of you know, I wrote a letter of support on behalf of our proposal to the federal government, and so this is not a hostile inquiry at all, as much as it's this chair's intent to do due diligence in terms of that alignment of Minnesota law with dominant practice that could be evolving here by virtue of this massive grant proposal. With that, members, I'm going to open it up to questions. It probably would be good to have the commissioner, Ms. Salzwager, Mr. Aronson, come back up. And, of course, Lisa Larson is still here. I think there was a question earlier for you, but you can stay right there, Ms. Larson. You don't need to come forward. So why don't we begin? Representative Greiling, I had you from the very beginning. You had a comment earlier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I you know, could take up the whole rest of the time with my question, so I'll just try to focus on one area and hope others will ask the other ones. And mine revolves around enhanced QComp. And, you know, to me, it's upsetting the apple cart to have enhanced QComp when we already have a very good QComp program in statute with growing support for it and more districts buying in. And so I'm concerned that after, even though the commissioner says people can keep what they have, in our earlier hearing that we had on this, we found that was only for a length of time. And then it seems to me we have the potential for having upheaval and some that have negotiated the current QComp not even being able to participate, and then we are set back again for students. So my question, and I know the department has said they wanted to supersize QComp in hopes of putting our application in better shape because we did not pass any teacher licensure changes last year. But I still question the wisdom of that. So my question for Ms. Larson is, in any of your readings of the guidelines from the Race to the Top federal guidelines, do you see anything there that would necessitate us having enhanced QComp versus the current QComp?
Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greiling, the enhanced QComp is a proposal from the department to reform education. There's nothing compelling reform. It's a recommendation from the department and in compliance with the federal guidelines.
Well,
Representative Greiling.
Well, Mr. Chair, but what I'm wondering is, do you think in your reading of the federal guidelines that the current QComp, to me we should be bragging about what we have. We're way ahead of the curve on charter schools, on QComp, and so by throwing in this enhanced QComp, we lay ourselves open to put bragging about what we're going to do instead of focusing on what we have, and to me that weakens our application if we aren't able to come through with that. But I wonder if in your reading of the Race to the Top guidelines, which is more careful than mine, I know why the department wants to do it, but do you think, is it dictated by the guidelines or is it just a Minnesota idea?
Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greiling, the guidelines provide the parameters for every state interested in applying for grant money to submit an application. There is certainly some amount of discretion, and each state, and that is evidenced by each state's unique content in the application. So in Minnesota's case, QComp, which has been discussed in other states to my knowledge, is the one of the important elements. That is a judgment call that Minnesota made because each state does have unique components to its application, but all components have to comply with the guidelines. So yes, it is a unique component, but it does comply with the guidelines.
And perhaps the commissioner might want to comment on this. I'm just going over language with staff here, and Ms. Larson, I think I concur with your part of your analysis here. The intent of the I think the intent of the federal government isn't to put very strict passageways within which a grant proposal will fit. There's certainly guidelines there, but as well. But I think there's a tension here about encouraging states to be creative, if you will. And I think objectively, you can argue that what's in the Minnesota proposal does, you know, push out in terms of that issue of creativity. Obviously, as mentioned by Mr. Aronson, you know, one of the new features from their perspective relative to the QComp enhancement, if you will, has to do with inclusion of principles. And so that's pushing out, you know, outside of I would argue, out of Minnesota intent and expectations. And then there's the issue of the multiple rating categories, which is a new element. And so perhaps, Commissioner, you might want to speak to sort of logic behind both of those. But part of what's difficult here, members, I acknowledge, is that none of this actually makes sense unless we talk about it in terms of how it's all connected to one another.
Yeah.
So we don't have standalone pieces here. And so it's fair game to constantly you know, both reflect and respond to, you know, what the interconnects are here. Mm-hmm. Commissioner.
Thank you. If you look on those last two pages about what the application requires, and Ms. Larson, I think, expressed it well. If you look on page, let's see, I don't have the page number here, but the second to the last page, clause two, it says, design and implement rigorous, transparent, and fair evaluation systems for teachers and principals that differentiate effectiveness using multiple measures, multiple rating categories that take into account data on student growth as a significant factor and are designed and developed with teacher and principal involvement. Conduct annual evaluation. So we do that with QComp. And it says of teachers and principals. So, you know, that's where you start to get all of the different, as the chair said, you have different standalone provisions, but they all work together on the criteria for great teachers and leaders that provide constructive feedback. Certainly the QComp program does include that. So you have to, and then it talks about relevant coaching and induction. So we've tried to put that into our model. The QComp, and I want to, you know, just reiterate, Mr. Aronson mentioned that there are 500 low-performing districts or sites that have been defined, and there is not. There are only 34 low-performing schools that we have selected. Of those, 22 are not charter schools, so we are not going to be seeing 500 principals moving around in the state of Minnesota. There's only 34, so it's a very discrete number. Of those schools, there probably will be no movement of principals because many of them are rural, and that does not make sense. So we're looking at kind of the transformation model for those low-performing schools, kind of based on the legislation that was passed last year with this site-governed, autonomous type of process that we would look at. So I want to assure that that is not going. There are not going to be 500 principals moving around.
And Commissioner, back on the first point, I apologize for interrupting again, but it does seem to me that the concept, the design concept of the use of multiple rating categories, puts us outside of what state statute has prescribed relative to the QComp design. Unless I'm not fully understanding it, it seems to me, I mean, I get this tension between you know, the need to be creative. But, you know, again, what I'm trying to be very diligent about is not whether it's meritorious creativity, but whether or not, in fact, introducing a concept such as a multiple rating category doesn't exceed the authority granted under state statute relative to QCOMP. I think, to me, that drives to the essence of the issue here.
And first of all, Mr. Chair, I don't think that it does go beyond the statute, because we do have evaluation procedures. There are multiple measures that are included in QCOMP legislation now. We do have school-wide measures. We have individual teacher measures. We have the professional evaluation measures. And all we're doing is really, I think, to meet the race to the top criteria, demonstrating that we have discrete measures of progress. We're including the principal because of the opportunity to have the principals have asked us to be part of QCOMP, so we certainly wanted to respond to that, and I think they have come to you in the past to be included in QCOMP. Again, I want to reiterate that the QCOMP program is still locally negotiated, so how the principal and all of the things are entwined are still going to be locally negotiated. For Race to the Top, for our districts to participate in Race to the Top, they have to give us an assurance that they're going to work towards an application and submit it in 2 years' time. But it's still all locally negotiated. There is no mandate that you must do this, and at the end of 2 years, you know, that's, you know, you're in. You know, you've got to do it. If you don't do it, if you choose not to do it, you don't have to. But we chose to do this enhancement with a statewide evaluation rubric because districts have asked us to do that. That's part of the enhanced program. More teacher support for the training of evaluators. We think that's very fair and very important. So I think what we tried to do was try to improve the implementation of QCOMP in positive ways, not to get around any kind of law changes, because we think that what we have done just is an enhancement of the work that we are doing in QCOMP and doesn't violate the legislation that's already in place.
And Commissioner, of course, in the end, you know, to the extent that the legislature has ownership over these issues, that's a good thing. I'm going to cut you off because I do want to push on to some other. Representative Briner, I believe you have a question or a comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll try to be concise because it's a really big picture issue, but it relates to the question, which is critical for our ability to apply to Race to the Top, whether there are any barriers in Minnesota law that prevent the linking of data on student achievement and student growth to teachers and principals for the purposes of teacher evaluation. And I'm looking at this document you provided us, mm-hmm. Commissioner, on the legal support, and the top paragraph there that refers to the work we did on the growth model, and because I'm so closely connected with that, I have a great deal of trouble with the use of the work we did on the growth model to support linking student achievement and student growth data to individual teacher evaluation, because the language we put in statute, I think, was precisely intended to provide a barrier to that link until we had further analysis of that growth data. It wasn't necessarily meant to be a permanent barrier, but it is a current legislative barrier, because what we heard many times in the work we did with experts, and we heard in committee here from psychometric experts, is that the current data did not warrant or did not justify moving down to the individual level, that connecting classroom data to an individual teacher. And until we watch that growth data over time, we wouldn't know whether the data would support that. So I'm very uncomfortable with the assertion in this document that there are no current barriers in Minnesota statute to that link.
And Commissioner, very quick.
Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Briner. The statute does prevent in any kind of individual display or a review or of teacher individual student or student linkage to teachers. That's in law. That's clear. We cannot do that internal to the school district. You can use evaluation data to support a teacher or whatever to analyze the teacher's performance. But we don't have, the state does prevent us from reporting out and linking individual student data to the teacher and reporting that. So that is a clear state prohibition, and that's what we used and said that was the assurance for that. It doesn't, every school district can do that right now. They can look at linkages of performance to a teacher and make decisions on whether that teacher is hired or not hired. We have a prohibition. We do not allow that individual teacher data to be reported out, and that's what the basis of this analysis was for. Now, I understand your concern that we might use a growth model in the future to do an analysis of that, but again, what we are doing for evaluation purposes right now is to bring together people to look at how you would use that, that, and it's part of the requirement for Race to the Top. So our tack is to bring people together. All right, let's look at the data that we have. How would we do that? How would it work in the future? And that's why we did form this group, because we, to this point, our QComp proposal does allow that, but it's school-wide data, it's individual, and it's very prescribed as far as MCA data, a standardized test, etc., and some linkage, but not entirely. So again, that's where the analysis of the law took place.
Representative Falls.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is relating to the schools on this map. I've got four schools that children from my district attend on this map. And if you could please clarify what the schools on this map get or have to do compared to the other schools in the state. It says that there are 22 traditional public schools as schools for intervention, and I'm just, you know, if you could clarify, is everything we're talking about for only these schools, or what is different about these schools? If you could clarify that, please.
Mr. Chair, if you would allow our deputy, she has been working really intensely with the low-performing school strategies, and she's got a lot more detail that she can give you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fowles, there's $50 million.
You'll need to identify yourself.
For the record, my name is Chaz Anderson, Deputy Commissioner. There's about $50 million set aside in Race the Top of the $330 million, and that's to provide about just over $1 million for each school to undergo a turnaround process. So what will happen in the first year will be a planning year for those schools. Those schools will decide which turnaround method they will move forward with. There's four prescribed in the Race the Top application. Once they have identified that model, they will be provided funding for a wide range of activities for things such as additional teacher supports, additional student supports that may be needed, like wraparound services. But all of that will be done in the first year of the grant. It's a planning year, so they'll decide what the model will be, and then they'll decide what the interventions will look like for those schools. And it will probably look different in each of the 22 traditional schools identified.
Mm-hmm. Representative Benson. I'm sorry, Representative Foss, I do want to keep us moving, but
Very quick follow-up. At least two of these schools have over 30 children in each classroom in its lowest first grade. Will some of that money be able to find a way to add more teachers so they can get, you know, maybe down to 20 or 25 per classroom instead of 30 to 35?
Mr. Chair, Representative Faust, class size reduction was not an identified intervention. However, looking at different models of staffing and classrooms, and so it's likely you could have interventions with students in smaller classes that need more support in certain areas such as reading or math, and providing those interventions through RTI or such. So we're trying not to look at this traditional model and reduce all class sizes, but look at the interventions that are needed for populations of students and how that fits with their needs.
Thank you. Representative Benson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And just to start off, I hope there might be an opportunity for our committee to delve into this a little more. This one session is really inadequate considering the momentous direction our state may be going. But first of all, I just want to relate to the commissioner a experience I had a number of years ago when I received an internship with Hennepin County. One day while we were touring what I call the toaster building in downtown Minneapolis, the person who was running a tour was telling me all about their compensation system and how proud they were and how progressive they were because they had an incentive pay system. I think it was an increase of 5%, something like that, for all employees who showed exemplary work. And because they wanted to get off of, I guess what we'd say in education, the steps and lanes notion. And I said, well, that sounds very progressive. How many people have, gotten this? Well, all of them, Mr. Benson. I said, all of them are superior? Oh, yes. We wouldn't be able to run this system if some people got this reward and others didn't. So my question, one observation to you is, are you sure that the QComp system, as you're proposing under the Race to the Top, will get around that institutional problem? But the question I have, the question I have for you is, do you see any merit at all in any of the concerns raised by Education Minnesota and others over the Race to the Top application requirements and the direction that may lead our state? Could you delineate one or two that you are sympathetic with?
And Commissioner, this probably gets you back to what you were trying to say at the very end of your presentation. We have about 2 minutes left, members.
Well, in regard to the implementation of QComp and making sure that it is implemented with fidelity and really trying to discern the progress of professional development over time, I think, Representative Benson, this is such a new concept for the teaching profession that it's going to take time for people to develop an evaluation rubric and system that truly is reflective of good professional development and some linkages to student achievement, as Representative Breinert alluded to, making sure that you have a fair system. But I think that we can do it. And I think one of the things I'm most excited about is the opportunity to bring some people together and look at the good things, the foundational things that we have already started and how we can improve those and then implement something with fidelity. Because as you said, Representative Benson, we are not all exemplary. And we vary even from day to day in what we're doing. And as we get new assignments and new things that we're learning, we do start from the beginning sometimes, with even when you're an experienced person. So we all grow at different rates, and we do need to have that. So I'm hoping that that we can develop something that will be discerning and that also will provide some interventions for teachers that are struggling and can improve, such as the peer assistance and review model. You asked about whether there were things that I was sympathetic with Education Minnesota, with their concerns. I want to reiterate that they mentioned a loss of due process. There's no intent that there would be a loss of due process for teachers if they are identified. So I would be sympathetic, certainly, with there's no intent of doing that. There's no intent to take away the decision-making process at the local level for whether someone is tenured or not. Certainly, I think we need, as you're alluding to, we need to have some kind of standardized evaluation system that at least provides some baseline expectation that from district to district we can guarantee if the teacher moves from district A to B that evaluation has been similar, but we still have that local decision making, and we would certainly agree with Education Minnesota that should continue in that way.
Yeah, Commissioner, we're probably going
to.
Thank you, Madam.
And thank you, Representative Benson. I do want to apologize to the other members who I'm not going to be able to get to questions today. I had several questions that I held off as well. I do think Representative Benson's advice of continuing to have a more intentional discussion on this is a good idea. The chair will work awfully hard to schedule that. Yet within this session, we are pressed. We're a policy committee, so we have the earliest deadlines. We will be hearing bills tomorrow and on Thursday as we continue to push assertively forward. But I do want to encourage members to continue to vet themselves with the R2T proposal. Obviously, interact with our testifiers here in the coming days and weeks. And as I said, I'll look for an opportunity to have some more discussion relative to this important development. Members, I need to have our minutes approved. I'm wondering, Representative Depke, if you would be so kind as to move our minutes of February 18th.
I'll be happy to, Mr. Chair. I recommend that we move the minutes from the last meeting.
Thank you. Representative Depke moves approval of the February 18th minutes. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Members, thank you again. Thank you for our testifiers. And until tomorrow, this committee stands adjourned.